Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
The most loved doctor on the airwaves is back. Dr. Safia Mohammed is here and ready to provide answers for all your medical questions, broadcasting live on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. Get in touch with your lunchtime doctor during the show. Call us at 627-322-3625 2257. You can also send your questions on WhatsApp at 306-1065. Welcome, Dr. Safia. How are you this morning?
Good afternoon, Carrie, and good afternoon to every single one locked in right here to your lunchtime doctor. As you all know, this is the program for you, where you get to send in those questions, where we get to deep dive, where we get to see how we can optimize your health. And of course, to all those who are having lunch, be it in the restaurants right now, in the supermarkets, wherever you're hearing this program, if, of course, you're snacking in the car, let us know what's on your lunchtime plate. And let's hear what you learned from this lunchtime doctor that you're sharing with your community. So, Carrie, it was a great weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We actually were able to have a lot of interaction with our listeners because of International Women's Day celebrations across the country,
mm-hmm.
and of course the march. And you know what I realized over this weekend? That finally people are paying attention to our health. So while COVID-19 may not have been one of the best things that have happened, we at least are becoming a little bit more health conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I'm grateful.
Yes. Guys, don't forget you can call us at 627-322-3625-2257. We'll be even taking WhatsApp messages on 306-1065. Let's take this call. Hi, good afternoon, you're live.
Terry B. Doc, what's up? Doc.
Yes, we're right here. Tell me what's your call concern. Let's hear. As you all can hear yourself.
Two things I want to find out, okay? On yesterday's Guardian, they had this glaucoma week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I want to have glaucoma, not cataract. Thing is, pressure in the eye. Right?
There's
something to do with pressure in the eye. We don't understand if it's high blood pressure. What is pressure in the eye, really? Like, we still can't understand it. And no matter what you put on the newspaper, they're not telling them what it is. But pressure in the eye is glaucoma. I wish you could explain what it is, really. And the other thing is, you know, I like my health. I just stick with my health, you know. And we, fellas, spend $10,000 on rinse, and they wouldn't buy a tonic for $100. That don't make sense, fellas. Well, then we listen.
Thank you so much.
You know, caller, thank you so much. There's a line, make it make sense. So that what you said there is really, and you hit the nail on the head there. Because, yes, guys, to all those who are listening, I hope you heard what the caller said. We spend a lot of money making sure the car look good. But what about your own body, your own health? That is equally or possibly even more important. So I like that line. We're going to make sure it makes sense. Now let's jump into that glaucoma. This entire week is glaucoma awareness, but at the same time, every day is a day to ensure we take care of our health. The thing about glaucoma, there is that buildup of, as the caller asked, pressure, but it's more so fluid that builds up in a part of the eye. And of course, it's a damage where the optic nerve connects to the eye, to the brain. Now, does the entire body's blood pressure affect the ocular blood pressure? The ocular pressure? Yes. So if one is hypertensive, it can also increase the ocular pressure. However, one can be normotensive, where they have a normal blood pressure, but they have damage to that part of the eye. And there is indeed an increased pressure inside the eye. I'm glad you saw what was highlighted in The Guardian on glaucoma, and of course across the media, but in particular, we want to make sure our patients understand. What we need you to understand as well is if you're experiencing any sort of eye pain, that's one of the commonest symptoms, if you're experiencing what we say as loss of peripheral vision. So you can see to the front, which is your central vision, but to the side, peripheral vision, you may be seeing some blurred spots. Or if you're seeing blurred or amplified lines around it, that's double vision, please get it checked out. Because here's the bad thing about glaucoma. It sneaks up on you, and in no kind of time, one can go from blurry vision to complete loss of vision. In fact, they call glaucoma the silent thief in the night of your vision. So any sort of vision defects, please, to all our callers, get it checked out.
All right, thank you very much. Bass joining us, of course, Freedom 106.5. We're live with the Lunchtime Doctor, as well as Sangeet 106.1 Vibe City 105 FM and Sky 99.5. Let's get some questions here on our WhatsApps. Of course, 306-1065 and indeed 6273-223 and 625-2257. And feel free to message our other frequencies and they will forward the message to us here as well. Hi, Doctor. What's good for scoliosis? Pain from my neck and shoulders. Thanks.
So when it comes to scoliosis, that is definitely something we need to address. First and foremost, we need to understand what are the triggers. Is it something ergonomic? Is it something structural, as in within our body itself? Or is it something that we can definitely pinpoint and then, of course, treat? Now, with persons with scoliosis, they tend to present with a lot of pain. It definitely, physiotherapy, stretches, even yoga tends to help. Some persons may even need to see an orthopedic surgeon, and that may lead to further treatment. It may result in surgical treatment. However, let's start first and foremost with your general assessment, because there is indeed non-surgical treatments. A lot of that non-surgical treatment starts with the prevention of the development of scoliosis. And that's where just our simple ergonomics, how we sit on our office chair, how we position our laptop. Quick little tip. Do you all know out there that your laptop is supposed to be positioned at the level of your eye? Most persons have their laptop on a flat table. It's actually supposed to be a little bit elevated. Your chair, the back of the chair is supposed to be parallel to your back, which is also supposed to be parallel to your lower limbs, so your legs. And if all of that is not in proper alignment, you're going to put extra pressure or misalignment on the back, which can worsen if one has scoliosis. Hope that answers the question.
All right, thank you there very much. Lunchtime Doctor, let's take a call on our phone lines at 6273-223-625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Bass. Good afternoon to the doctor. Doc, I just want to say something. Recently, I'm at the St. Martin Health Center, and, you know, the doctors there, they told me they do a routine blood test, you know. And when the result came back, it was so amazing that my kidney function, my heart function, my liver function, and all of these things. And the doctors wanted to ask me what was my secret. You know, and I told them, well, I'm a full-time vegetarian, you know, for about 15 years. I eat one good meal a day, that is lunchtime, and it's vegetarian, and it's well prepared, you know, like lentil peas and cassava with pumpkin and these sort of things, you know. And these kind of diet is what keeps you in good health, you know. And with regards to the eye, I had a slight little problem with the glaucoma, and I used the drops, and now I'm totally 0% free of glaucoma, you know, Doc? So it all takes with you, that the care that you take for yourself, you know, and you will be in good health as I am. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Paula, thank you so very much. And, you know, there's so many health benefits to a plant-based or vegan lifestyle. In fact, every single day, right here on the Lunchtime Doctor, we give you those healthy, nutritious tips, and that's one of them. So anyone who is following that lifestyle in terms of ensuring you have a little bit more fiber from your fruits and vegetables, more lentils, legumes, rather than the high levels of saturated fats. Of course, if we're having meat, and I myself love meat, I love fish more than ever, I'll use salmon. If I'm having meat, I'll use the white meat, and I'll prepare it in a grilled way. So for those who like meat, ensure you prepare it in a healthy way. But to that caller, yes, you're on the right track, especially in eliminating some of the causes that lead to the unhealthy lifestyle. The fact that you utilize the drops for glaucoma and that has reversed the signs, I hope that gives some inspiration to all those who are tuned in here. Too often in this population, we have patients waiting and waiting and waiting until it's too late. Just like the caller suggested, he went, he got the eye drops, and now his glaucoma has been reversed. Once we're able to get that ocular pressure under control, you're back to normal eyesight. And you yourself can prevent the degradation of your own health. Hope that answers your question. And thank you so much, caller, for that feedback.
All right, kudos to him. And I know he mentioned, Doctor, he eats a one good meal a day, but how often are you supposed to eat a day? You know, you usually have 4 square meals every day, and how important is it to be eating on time?
Well, you know, there's so much debate around that. In fact, some say have a good solid breakfast. Eat like a king for breakfast, eat like a prince for lunch, and like a beggar for dinner, which is a smaller meal. And then, of course, you can have your small meals or snacks during the course of the day. So what's recommended, say, for someone who wants to lose weight is small meals throughout the day to just keep the metabolism going. You don't want to have a surge. Now, the caller clearly was not diabetic. A diabetic patient, if they have one heavy meal, they're going to shoot their glycemic index, their sugar values within the blood, and it's going to overshoot. So that's not what we recommend for diabetic patients. In fact, we recommend small meals throughout the day. But then we have to be realistic what we can balance. You know, Bass, I remember when I was working in the ICU, if I got one meal a day, that'd be plenty. In fact, it was just those small things throughout the day that kept me steady. And then, unfortunately, in the evening time, I had a heavier meal. I've learned now that's not the right way, and I try to switch to at least a solid breakfast. So my one solid meal for the day is indeed breakfast, and then throughout the day, it's either fruit snacks and a lot of water.
All right, good information there. Doctor, I have a family member in hospital bleeding from the anus. It's a female on the hospital. Doctor, can find the complaints relate, please. But
okay, so let's try to decode that message. Any sort of blood from the back passage, from the perianal, from the anal canal, can be several things. It could be more simpler in terms of hemorrhoids. It could be more sinister, as in some sort of cancerous or malignant process. It could be a polyp along the gut lining, or it could be something like a rectal cancer or a colorectal cancer. And our population here in Trinidad actually have a higher incidence of colorectal cancer. So I'm so sorry that your relative is experiencing that. I'm pleased, however, that she's in the hospital. If she's bleeding, she certainly would need that recuperation of blood products. So to the loved ones of this relative, I would suggest if you can donate blood, because we often have to optimize any patient who is bleeding with blood products. I also want to suggest to any one of her relatives, if it is indeed a malignancy, as in a cancer, then that colorectal cancer is one that is very much genetic. So please make sure all the other relatives are checked. I wish you all the best, and I sincerely hope she recuperates soon.
All right. Once again, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Sophia Muhammad, on Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105 FM, Sangate 106.1 FM and Sky 99.5 FM. Our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course for WhatsApps only, 306-1065. And feel free to message our other frequencies and they will forward your message to us. Doctor, I am anemic. What do you recommend for someone who is anemic?
So any patient who unfortunately has anemia, and anemia to all those who are tuned in, can is indeed where the blood count is lower than usual. Typically, it might be an HB, a hemoglobin level of under 10. That may be because of an iron deficiency. That may be from a vitamin B12 deficiency or even a folate deficiency. So those are the easier ones to fix because we know it's a micronutrient. We can just optimize on those nutrients. When it comes from an internal bleeding, that's where we have to identify the cause. Or if it's a female with heavy menses, amenorrhagia, that also needs to be managed. Female patients with fibroids also have present with anemia because they have a high amount of bleeding either during the cycle, intermenstrual, or during the period itself. So first and foremost, we need to identify what's the cause of that anemia and then directly treat. In addition to all the micronutrient support, we know there's a host of nutritional support that can indeed improve your blood count. Let's get back to our green leafy vegetables, the nice backyard pak choi or spinach. That helps tremendously. Chana, legumes, all of that can bring up that hemoglobin. A key little thing to remember, if you are taking an iron supplement, iron, that particular micronutrient, is indeed absorbed in the gut. However, the point in the gut that absorbs it also needs vitamin C. So if you're taking an iron tablet without taking any sort of vitamin C, then what you'll end up doing is passing it through the gut and it does not become properly absorbed. So have your iron tablet with your vitamin C or just have a natural source as in your citrus juice. Hope that answered the question.
All right, let's get a call right here at 625-2257 and 627-3223. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Oh, we lost that one there. Let me see if I could go back to the WhatsApps. I would like to know when behind your neck swells and pains all behind the neck and shoulders, what does that mean?
So several things. First and foremost, that's red flag. I want you to go right away to the health center. If it is indeed, some persons may have a musculoskeletal injury if there's some sort of swelling. However, we have had patients with high blood pressure that present with a tenderness in the lower neck area or just in that occipital area. And that high blood pressure can predispose you to stroke or heart attack. So please, if you have a blood pressure machine, check it at home or present right away to the health center. Most times it will be a musculoskeletal injury and that's easily treatable. However, let's make sure if it's something more sinister, we can treat it right away.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to The Lunchtime Doctor.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Doctor. Doctor, tell me something. I love sweet things. If I don't get my coffee sweet or my tea sweet, I wouldn't drink it. And I went to do a test, and I'm positive. I'm not positive. Negative. I have no sugar. Tell me what caused that. But I eat plenty of pepper. I don't have an effect with the sugar.
So thank you so much, caller. But here, I am saying to you, Dr. Mohammed is saying to you, you're sweet enough already. You don't need all of that sugar, okay? Many Trinidadians have that sweet tooth. And thankfully, you're not diabetic now, and I'm really glad that you are not. As one ages, however, we know our population have a predisposition for diabetes. You may present later on. Yes, you did share, you eat a lot of pepper, that does not counteract the effect of the sugar. So if you can find healthy substitutes, if you're having in sugar in your tea, cut it down. Instead of 2 teaspoons, 1. Or why not use a natural sweetener like honey? 1 or 2 drops of it will give you the same effect without the higher glycemic index. Hope that answers your question.
All right, we have a question here. What can be done to reduce or eliminate fibroids?
So fibroids is one that is so complicated. First and foremost, we need to do proper ultrasound or proper radiological investigation so we can identify where exactly is the fibroid. That will determine the treatment, and the size of the fibroid and the number of fibroids will also determine the treatment. There's few treatment pathways. First and foremost, we go through the hormonal treatment pathway, and if that's not reducing the size of the fibroid, then definitely we may need to do surgery. However, I want to encourage all that may have to do surgery with fibroid. The surgical interventions have very much changed. We can do laparoscopic surgery, which is not the massive incision on the tummy. We can do fine 2 centimeter, 3 centimeter laparoscopic surgery incisions on the tummy and still remove the fibroid. And it can be a one day process. So yes, there's surgical treatment combined with your hormonal treatment, but the mainstay is to get it investigated, know the extent of it, see your gynecological doctor and let them review and make that treatment plan sooner rather than later. As I mentioned earlier, all patients with fibroids may predisposed to anemia. They may present with signs and symptoms, that's fatigue. They may feel weak, lethargic. So you want to also double check your hemoglobin, because we'll need to treat and optimize your hemoglobin values. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Vibe City 105 FM. 627-3223, 625-2257, and your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065. Let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon again. Doc, I the last person calling said I love penny sugar and penny pepper, but at age 70, and have no symptoms. Tell me if I'm doing this correct.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I heard the age. You're doing really well, and I'm proud of you that you've not presented with diabetes. I'm not the person that could advocate too much sugar. So please understand, a healthy, balanced, in moderation, you're already on that path. If you can, if you need to, cut down a little bit, but continue to enjoy your life in the best way possible. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon. Lunchtime, doctor, welcome.
Well, hi, good afternoon. Okay, so just a quick question. My mom, she is a heart patient, and she has... Okay, sorry, I was listening to myself on the radio. Okay, so my mom is a heart patient as well as diabetes, but she's getting circulation problem, I believe, because she's having pain in her upper thigh at night or when she stands still. But if she starts to walk, the pain stops.
Right. So any patient with any sort of cardiovascular concern, they may present with lower limb peripheral neuropathy. And that's what causes this pain. You may notice swelling around the ankles, discoloration even. That pain is when there is the restriction of the flow of the normal blood flow within the body. So that's what people refer to as circulation problems. Let's see how. I'm certain she's probably on a few medications, diuretics to reduce the amount of reduce that excessive amount of water in the body, and of course any sort of antihypertensives. I do hope she's getting a little bit of movement, mobilization, some exercise, 10, 15 minutes in there will certainly help reduce that pain as well. And what we've seen with a lot of our age patients, simple exercises and physiotherapy, especially around the ankle area, helps reduce that pain. I hope that answers the question. And of course, next time she presents to the health center, let them ensure they review the ankles and review the neuropathy in particular, because there are also new medications on the market to help ease that diabetic or cardiovascular-based lower limb pain. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get
such an appetite.
Thank you very much there, sir. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Hello and good afternoon. What I would like to ask the doc, so being in my 50, right, I would like to know what tests can I do to know what condition my heart is. You know, I go by a doctor, what test should I ask or what should I do?
Brilliant question, and I hope every single person is tuned in and listened here. The caller asked, he's 50 and he wants to know what investigations to do. Here's how easy we're going to make it. A, B, C. But particularly for your heart, so A is your HbA1c. That's the HbA1c. That's a blood test. B, you want to know your blood pressure. C, we want to know your cholesterol. But let's get granular. For heart evaluation, we also want you to do something called the ECG. That's the electrocardiogram. And for all those who've been to the doctor, that's when they lie you down flat, put the leads onto 5 positions on the wall of the heart. So that day, male and female, make sure you're wearing comfortable clothing that can be adjusted, because we'll place leads onto the chest area, especially left-sided, and we look at the electrical conductivity of the heart. That's one test. The blood test that we do, we like to know your cholesterol values in particular. We'll want to know your sugar values because, yes, a diabetic patient, it can worsen one with a cardiovascular disease. And we'll want to know your complete blood count, your HB in particular. But if you just remember your ABCs, that's good enough for me, and there's enough numbers that you need to know. I hope that answers your question, and I hope you call us back and let us know what your results are.
All right. Hello, Lunchtime Doctor. Let's get another call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Is colloid silver prevents one from getting sick? And is alpha lipoic acid good for improved and circulation? And is it okay for I to take pressure on time? That's what you question.
Thank you so much. No, I didn't quite hear the first part of the question, but I definitely heard the last one. So when it comes to one with the blood pressure concerns, the caller asked, and this is what I believe the caller asked, if it's something else, then please call her, let us know. You can text it in or call back again. If one is hypertensive and placed on medications, yes, you will be required to be on medications for a certain time frame. And the person asks if it's all the time. No, it may not be all the time, but it really depends on how high, if it's in the stage 3 category, if it's not well controlled, and of course, what your lifestyle measures are. I have had patients that they were able to bring down their blood pressure consistently, manage it through lifestyle measures, that's eating well, proper exercise regime, and of course managing their stress, and they've been able to eliminate the need for blood pressure medications. That, however, is a very strict balance of your lifestyle measures. You mentioned 2 other medications, but I didn't quite get it clearly. If you want to call back and let us know, just send it in as a text to the station. We'll be able to answer that question.
All right, let's get a question here from Sangeet. Dear doctor, my mom has 4 strokes and is now being unable to walk alone. What can help her? Also, her ankle has been swollen.
My dear, I'm so sorry that your mom is going through this. 4 strokes over a certain time, and I'm not too sure how far it is, it can definitely debilitate not just the patient, but the entire family. So what can help? One, we definitely need her on her cardiovascular medication, because we certainly don't need another event. And when we say another event, a stroke is a thrombotic event. That's a one part of the blood, the entire cardiovascular system, the arteries and the veins, there was a clot within the clot. It was so severe, it completely blocked blood flow. And that's what triggered a stroke. The stroke may happen in the brain area, but it affects the limbs. It may affect your speech. It may affect just about all parts of the brain. Once a patient have had a stroke, chances of them having a repeat stroke is very high. And as in this case, your mom has had four. So there can be another. And this is why there needs to be consistent. Take the medications that's required, that's prescribed, especially the ones to reduce the clotting ability. So that's the antithrombotics, aspirin in particular, and of course any medications to reduce the blood pressure. If the stroke has affected the limb and now there is some sort of reduced mobility, there are many different medical institutions out there that will help regain that rehabilitation. But it starts with exercising, gentle physiotherapy, and moving through a rehabilitation program. You may even want to consult with not just an orthopedic, a physiotherapist, or an occupational therapist, because they can help you move through those exercises. Sometimes patients who have had families who have had a stroke patient may need to adjust certain things in the home space because the mobilization of the patient is not as was before. They may even, I don't know if her speaking has been affected or if her ability to chew has been affected, but if that's the case, then you'd need to adjust the nutritional, what she's putting in. Sometimes persons would have had to almost return to that pureed food. So yes, they even high caloric drinks that can be specifically for stroke patients. I would suggest when next you return to the doctor, you have that conversation, because I know all medical professionals, especially for stroke patients, we have that post-discharge conversation where we talk about rehabilitation. Now, in my clinic, I've actually seen patients be properly rehabilitated even after had a stroke, and then they continue to live a healthy lifestyle. But they're living that lifestyle with use of medications, integrating exercise, and managing the stressful triggers that would have brought on the stroke. Hope that answers the question.
All right, thank you once again, folks. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm back again. I'm the one who asked about is colloidal silver prevents one from getting sick, and the alpha lipoic acid, what is good for, nerves or circulation?
Okay, doctor, did you hear that?
Yes.
Alpha lipoic acid.
The person asked about the colloidal silver or the alpha, that particular acid. Now, both of them definitely is more an over-the-counter medication. It's not one typically prescribed by medical professionals. That colloidal silver, yes, it is used in, say, where persons may want a worm out. That tends to be used quite often, even in wound dressings. But I would suggest let your healthcare professional prescribe these particular medications. Then over-the-counter medications, and like everything else, there's side effects to it. Hope that answers the question.
All right, once again, folks, the Lunchtime Doctor on Freedom 106.5, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Good afternoon, doctor. I have a question. I had a heart attack in April of last year. I was placed on medication, one of those medications being Fadaxa. And to my recollection, the doctor at the time of administering the prescription told me that I would probably need to take that medication for at least the next 6 months, after which they would review and then decide whether or not it should be continued or it should be stopped. However, I have not been able to attend a clinic since, because they postponed my clinic appointment twice. I now have a clinic appointment for September of this year. So I'm just wondering, should I... I mean, well, I haven't stopped it. I'm still taking it, and I'm wondering, should I continue taking this medication? Should I consult a physician privately, or should I go to the hospital and query whether or not I should continue this medication? Listen, okay.
No, hold on the line. Hold on the line.
Okay.
Are you regularly checking your blood pressure at home?
I check it from time to time, not every day, but every time that
okay.
I check it.
Can you give me an idea?
Good.
Tell me
the last time I checked it was 121/80, so yeah, pretty much okay.
Right. So here's the thing, sir. You've had a heart attack April last year. Yes, you're still within that 1 year time frame, and that particular medication is one that we often review in a 6 month and then 1 year time frame. Don't change what is working at present. It is working. Anytime one reduces or removes a medication, we always must be monitored closely to see what the adjustment in the body is. If your next primary care hospital appointment is all the way down in September and you haven't been reviewed, any cardiovascular patient, any heart patient should be reviewed every 3 months. So yes, I agree with you fully. If you can, and if it's within limits to be able to see a private physician, that would definitely augur well for you and your optimization. If however, and you already mentioned that the blood pressure is well within normal means, so then you can continue with all the lifestyle habits that you are already on and maintain that, and then have your appointment in September. But between now and September is quite a few months, so I would definitely, 1 year post heart attack, you would need to do a repeat of your ECG in particular, and if you can, do a repeat echo. But let's start with you at least being seen by a healthcare professional. And yes, I know the private healthcare professionals can be a little pricey, but look at this as an investment in your health, one appointment at least, and then you could always follow through with the public healthcare clinics. Hope that answers the question.
Yes, it does. And the other thing is, I am the same person that called a couple of times and mentioned to you that I had actually quit smoking on that said day that I had the heart attack. So April coming will be 1 year since. And I have
so congratulations. That is amazing. Amazing. And I hope, can you continue and tell us how did you deal with not just the triggers, but the sensation of wanting to smoke again?
Well, actually, from the day that I decided that, when I had the heart attack and I decided on that day that that's it, I am going to quit, I have not had a single craving for cigarettes. Because I think it's because it's willpower, mind over matter. And I made up my mind that this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I am going to do. And I did it, and I have not had a single craving for cigarette since then.
Well done. Well done. Kudos to you. You've accomplished something that many still struggle with. And I do hope every single person who's listening is really inspired by this conversation. I, myself, is definitely inspired. I've had hundreds of thousands of patients over the past 19 years being a doctor. And the one thing that's quite difficult is that tobacco cessation, stopping cigarette smoking.
I was one of those who used to say, I could stop anytime I want. But I never did stop until now. And like I say, I could stop anytime I want, and I did that. I stopped when I wanted to this time, because of health issues, and I made the decision, that's it, I'm going to stop, and I did. So when people, I usually hear it, people say that it's very hard to stop. I say, no, it's not hard to stop. It's your mind. If you make your mind up to do it, you can do it.
Definitely. And it's the strength, as you mentioned, the strength and the willpower and that mindset to know what's important. And of course, to prioritize your health. Now, anyone who's experienced a heart attack, they will tell you it's a crushing pain. They feel as if a truck ram into them. And it's not an experience they ever want to go through again. And what we do know is some persons are very lucky when they get a heart attack that they can recover. And some persons, unfortunately, do not. You know, there's still a story that plagues my mind, that hurts my soul every single time I talk about it. And it's a young 34-year-old gentleman, very young. He exercises well. He has an active lifestyle. However, he does smoke excessively. And when he presented with a heart attack, he was literally on the verge, and we had to take him right away. Between the time of the heart attack and the time of his surgery was actually 62 minutes. And yes, he was operated on in just an hour, and that's the only thing that saved his life. Other than that, all the surgeons, when we look at the blockage that his heart had at age 34, because of cigarette smoking, because he had no other risk factors, we knew that this was life or death. So to all those who tune in, please, when we say your life is in your hands, it really is, you know, these decisions, you, and I hope this program here and all the other health programs right here on Freedom continues to empower you to make the right health choice. It is for your benefit and that of your family.
All right, thank you, Douglas. Got a couple questions coming in from Sky 99.5. Good afternoon, doctor. Please, what causes a swollen ankle?
Good, easy question. Now, we see swollen ankles in quite a few patients. Patients with, again, that circulation disorder. Anyone who has high blood pressure, or even we see patients with diabetic neuropathies, they will have an experience at swollen ankles. You definitely need to see the health center, go to the health professional there. We can indeed look at and evaluate and ensure you are on specific medications to reduce that circulation or peripheral vascular disease. That's the proper medical term. Trinis like to say we have a circulation disorder, but it's really PVD, peripheral vascular disease. There are a host of medications that can treat it. The cornerstone of it is to reduce the blood pressure, reduce any sort of diabetes within the body, and reduce the triggers that will worsen that swollen ankle.
All right. So another question from Sky. Hi, doctor. Is it unhealthy for the guts to take Dulcolax every other month?
Now, once there is a reason to take Dulcolax, sure, but if you're not experiencing constipation, if you're just doing it as quote-unquote a clean out, I would not be one that recommends that. You see, what you can end up doing is you may end up clearing out the normal gut bacteria that we need within the gut to help keep it fighting the germs and pathogens. So unless it's prescribed, unless there's an indication like constipation, then you don't need to do that on a regular basis. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Somebody messaged about remember the elderly gentleman who called and said he likes a lot of sweet and there's no diabetes going on. They said, could it be that his pancreas is working well to produce insulin?
Most definitely. Not only his pancreas is working well, I'm pretty certain he has a good nutrition in addition to just having that. Some people do have that sweet tooth, but it's not in all their meals. It may just be, as he mentioned, in the tea, right? Or the coffee. So I'm pretty certain he has that balance in there and he may not quite realize it. And yes, to the person who mentioned, his pancreas is certainly working well.
And he's from the old days too, so there's a lot of good food in the old days. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Someone says, yeah, my mother had a heart attack 7 months ago, but now she's getting upper thigh pain when she stands still as well as a night for about 1 hour. Once she starts walking, it stops.
Right. So you actually answered the question there. A little bit of movement reduces that thigh pain. However, any sort of pain in the lower limbs, I definitely want you to get that checked out. patients who've had a heart attack means there's a clot within the heart. Those clots can go anywhere throughout the entire vascular system, and it could be in the legs, and that's what's causing the pain. It's called claudication. So imagine you have your arteries and your veins, and there's a clot within it. Now, as the blood needs to pass through, it gushes over and it constricts, and that's what causes this pain. So definitely, please go get it checked out. Check your cholesterol levels in particular, and they may need to add an extra layer of medication just to ensure there's proper blood circulation. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get another question here. We have 9 minutes to go. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Afternoon. Right. We have a patient here where around 55 years old. And what happened is, like, when they get up in the morning, the pressure will be high. But they see the they're moving around, I think, in the day, you read the pressure and even normal. But, like, once when they get off, knock off the bed, the pressure will be high. But it will keep low, like, once they're moving around, I think, and, like, they're moving, you find it will be like close to normal, but once they rest from bed, obviously the higher intensity I keep. Doctor, listen, looking off me. Bye.
Certainly. So I'm good. This is something that I'm very concerned about. Patients that are weak with high blood pressure, we want you to get something checked out, and it's called obstructive sleep apnea. We've seen this in a lot of patients, particularly those that there's a rise of blood pressure overnight. So if there's any sort of obstruction on their breathing patterns, in particular obstructive sleep apnea, that can lead to a very high blood pressure first thing in the morning. So in addition to, obviously, as they move along, they're able to breathe better, they're able to get more oxygen into their system, so the blood pressure normalizes. But we've seen patients with obstructive sleep apnea that the blood pressure goes so high during the night that unfortunately they can have a heart attack or a stroke. So get that checked out. There's a host of ways we can treat obstructive sleep apnea, but it starts with the diagnosis. I hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Hi.
Please turn your radio down, miss.
Sorry about that. I heard you last week speaking about dealing with hormones. Could you treat hormones? Hello?
Okay, thanks so much. Yeah, I believe you said, could you, treat hormones?
Treat hormones over, especially if your hormones are unbalanced.
So, okay, first and foremost, it starts with which one of the hormones are indeed unbalanced, right? I believe last week we were talking about particularly some reproductive system defuncts that would need the hormonal treatment. So yes, we would look at if it's the testosterone or estrogen or progesterone, or we can go a little bit deeper, FSH, LH, prostaglandins. And then based on that, there are a host of medications that can indeed be utilized that are indeed hormonal treatment. Another thing that we like to look at is the thyroid function. Because the thyroid tends to be the main gland that manages all of these neurochemicals that are produced throughout the body, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I hope that answers your question. And yes, it's treatable.
But how can I contact you? Because I think it's more than that.
Okay, I understand. So here's what. You can just send us a message straight to the WhatsApp. Unfortunately, at this point in time, I'm not seeing any new patients simply because we're still managing through a number of COVID patients. Hope that answers your question.
But I cannot because I don't buy data.
All right, no problem. So we will find a way for you to get connected. Thanks so much for calling the station.
I'm actually seeing, stay on the line, miss. I'm actually seeing your number here. So I will try to get your number back there. I just took down her number. So we'll try to get in contact with you. All right, 5 minutes away from 1 o'clock, the Lunchtime Doctor. Let's get a question here. Oh, we had this other one coming out from Sky. Good day, doctor. I get up with waist pain. What can I do?
So let's try to figure out, as usual, anyone who's waking up with pain, let's try to figure out the triggers. Sometimes it can be the sleep habits at night. Sometimes it could be bad ergonomics. You know, sometimes we may not be sleeping on proper mattresses. It may not give us the proper support. Or it could be a past injury. Waist pain in particular, I'd want to make sure you're doing a little bit of stretches before you go to sleep or first thing in the morning. If that is combined, however, with a lower blood pressure or high blood pressure, as we just mentioned, then we certainly need to understand a better idea as to what is causing that. But for the waist pain, I'm honestly not too worried. Start with a few stretches. There are some deep stretches you can involve with in the yoga stretches that can certainly help ease that pain.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. My wife had surgery for varicose veins in both legs. She's hypertensive and she now has a swollen right leg. Recently, her blood work was very good. She uses Daffalon 500. All right, what can we do?
Okay, so she's already on the right track. She's on medications. She had the surgery. The thing about varicose veins is that it can indeed return. So you want to continue with that medication. I'd also suggest that she be placed on some sort. You know, I talk about exercise all the time. And we've had callers talk about how just that inclusion of exercise, what big difference that plays. Once there's varicose veins, in especially that burning, throbbing, muscular cramping type feeling, then it will return even after the surgery. So you want to ensure that you are indeed doing all of the necessary measures to prevent the return of this particular varicose veins. I would suggest there's specific leggings or what they call a hosiery, a tight hosiery that can be used as well. You want to look at your nutrition. You want to switch out to the low salt, high fiber. When you're resting at night, you want to elevate the legs. So the legs at a higher level than the level of the heart. And to the women out there, you want to try to avoid wearing high heels. And yes, I know that's even hard for me to process. I don't like to wear high. I love my high heels. And no one can tell me I can't wear my high heels. But in some cases, if those are for patients who have varicose veins, we always advise moderate heel wear. Hope those quick tips help and hope you don't have to go for neck surgery having varicose veins.
All right, doctor, we just have about 2 more minutes. Would you mind letting us know what can we look forward to in tomorrow's Health Plus segment?
Definitely. So join us first and foremost tomorrow on CNC3 Morning Brew, just about 7:30, 7:40, where you're going to hear us discuss our Health Plus segments. In the paper tomorrow in your Guardian, we're looking at endometriosis, that particular condition that causes a lot of pain and distress and often swept under the carpet. We're also going to be talking a little bit more about some health benefits of apple cider vinegar and other antioxidants, potent antioxidants that we can find naturally. Again, you're right here, 12 to 1 is your lunchtime doctor. So stay tuned onto Freedom and join us again right here, 12 to 1, for myself, Dr. Safiya Mohammed.
All right, thank you there very much, doctor. Catch you tomorrow. You've been listening, folks, to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105.1, Sky 99.5, and of course, Sangeet 106.1. Thank you for all your calls, your comments, and your questions. And we'll be back with you tomorrow at 12 noon. So check us out for, once again, the Lunchtime Doctor.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.